Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Recovery Radio broadcast, recorded live at the Laetal Recovery Center in downtown Moscow. Recovery Radio is an outreach of the Laetal Recovery Center located at 531 South Main Street in Moscow. You can contact the LRC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at laetalrecoverycenter@gmail.com. You can also find them on the web at laetalrecoverycenter.org and on Facebook.
And Recovery Radio's purpose is to share with our community how recovery from addiction and mental health issues affects us all, to make our community aware of the recovery resources available in our area, and to share the personal stories of people in and around recovery, highlighting their experience, insight, and hope for continuing recovery. I am Radio Johnny. I am a grateful recovered alcoholic, recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And with me today, as always, my faithful companion and sidekick.
All right. I'm Denise, and I'm a grateful believer in Jesus, and also very happy to be here and to be in recovery today.
Fantastic. Today, our topic is going to be, what is an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting like, and how does it work? Basically, when people first want to get into recovery, and if you have a problem with alcohol specifically, although most of the -A meetings, NA, AA, Overeaters Anonymous, most of them use a fairly similar format. Not floor mat. What's wrong with me?
I mean, you got to wipe your feet on something,
yeah. But... we don't have time to go into what's wrong with me, that's for sure. Anyway, basically, a meeting opens. There's a chairperson who kind of leads the meeting. The meeting script or format is decided on by the group at some point. They hold what they call a group conscience, and the group decides on, you know, basically just the verbiage and what they're going to read. And all the groups do things a little bit differently, but fairly close to along the same lines. Well, just for example, we'll say I'm the chairperson of this meeting between Denise and I, and I would welcome everybody to the meeting. I would ask them politely to, you know, turn their cell phones onto the vibrate mode so it doesn't create any disturbances. And we would start out typically with a moment of silence to think about why we're at the meeting. Then typically we go into the serenity prayer, which is, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And most groups do that, a lot of groups do that, basically to set the tone, because it's life and death. For an alcoholic like me, what I learn in these meetings, what I contribute in these meetings, may mean life or death for me or for someone else. So that kind of sets the tone. Then we go in typically and we read what's called the preamble, which Denise will read in a second. And the preamble really describes what Alcoholics Anonymous is. So take it away, Miss Denise.
All right. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experiences, strengths, and hopes with one another that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversies, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Okay, and again, that gives you a pretty broad overview of what AA does. And in a lot of the meetings I'm with, they go from there and they ask one of the members present to read how it works from chapter 5 of the big book, the big blue book. They call it the big book. It's actually called Alcoholics Anonymous, which is what the groups have stolen their name from. I don't know what that has to say about rigorous honesty, but at any rate, that's how it is. And from chapter 5, it reads, how it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunate. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought. And then, typically the next thing is we have someone read the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, and where the last thing I read was how it works, this is why it works.
All right. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6. An AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. AA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you, Denise. And once typically we get through that, the chairperson will ask the group, is there anyone here for their first, second, or third AA meeting? And if there is, introduce yourself by your first name so we can get to know you. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Probably the biggest one is when somebody is coming into their first, second, or third AA meeting, it's a good possibility they haven't listened to this show and they don't really know what to expect. They're nervous. They're not even sure if they should be there. And there's a whole gambit of emotions that are going on as well. And if there is someone there who's in that fragile, very beginning state of sobriety, most groups will shift to what they call a first step meeting, where we really go into what that first step is all about. Admitted to our innermost self that we were alcoholic and that our lives had become unmanageable. Although to the average temperate, healthy person, it's pretty obvious that if you're drunk all the time, your life's no longer manageable in any way, shape, or form. But for the alcoholic, it may not be clear. So they'll go in and talk about that. Mm-hmm. Then we typically go in and ask for sobriety birth dates or celebrations. You know, is anyone here with 0 to 30 days of sobriety? Then we go 60 days, 90 days, 6 months, 9 months, and then into annuals. And if anyone responds in that time, there's usually applause, congratulations, and the people will be asked to share, how'd you do that? How did you stay sober for 30 days? Again, you normal temperate drinkers out here will not understand how important that is, but that's okay, because the program isn't really for you. It's for the alcoholic or the addict or the person with mental health issues. 30 days of not drinking after a lifetime of drinking is an incredible achievement. And then once we get that past that point, you know, there may be a few other things, AA announcements. They may remind people, they'll pass the basket, which is, 7th tradition says every group ought to be self-supporting, declining outside contributions. And they'll ask that people share what you can. You know, everything goes to keep the lights on. We send money out to the different levels of the organization, the district, the area assembly, and then the general service office back in New York, so we can keep the books going and, you know, raise concerns through the ranks.
Helps pay for the coffee too, I'm assuming, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, okay. It pays for the coffee.
That's what matters there in that beginning. I had to interject.
That's right. And that's a very important part. If you ever look, my joke is, if you're ever looking for an AA meeting, just around 6 o'clock at night, drive around behind the hospitals and the churches and look for people smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee.
And then you know you're there.
That's probably an AA meeting.
Right.
And then, you know, once all the formal part starts, they'll launch into a topic or, you know, like I said, a first step meeting for somebody. Some groups talk about because there's 12 steps and 12 traditions, they'll talk about that based on the month. So January, first month, first step. Mm-hmm. February, second step, and so on.
Well, that works out well.
Yeah, there's like, yeah. You know, one wonders if there's a reason for that. But is purely up to the group how they want to do it and how they open for shares. Typically, the chairperson will open it up. Some people pass it around the circle. Some people just let people share what comes into their minds. And the meeting goes on. And typically, a meeting is an hour long. Some are longer. Some are shorter, depending. I've been to lunch meetings that run like 40 minutes, which gives people 10 minutes to get from work to the meeting and 10 minutes to get back. And everyone eats lunch while they're there. So there's a lot of talking with your mouth full. But, you know, if you need a meeting in the middle of the day, that works great. And then chairperson closes the meeting with the serenity prayer or sometimes the responsibility statement, which I love. It's who's responsible. I'm responsible. Whenever anyone anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I'm responsible. And then we go out into the world with the rest of you weirdos and try and blend in. You know, try and be good citizens, you know, not repeat past bad behavior. So if you're wondering what an AA meeting is, how it works, that's pretty much it. Oh, one other thing. You can go online to AA.org and find links to schedules for meetings in your area. In this area, if you search AA District 22, you'll find the District 22 website, which includes Moscow and Pullman. There's also District 7 for you people that are down in the Lewis-Clark Valley. District 7 has their own website. So you can go there and find meeting schedules. And in the meeting schedules, you'll see a O or a C, the letter O or the letter C, next to the meeting description. And what that is, it's an opened or a closed meeting. An open meeting, anyone is welcome to come in. So people who are not struggling with alcohol can come in as non-participating observers. And sometimes we see medical students because they have homework that says go to an AA meeting so you can learn about, you know, what these people do in their program of recovery. And that happens once in a while. And sometimes it's family members who are just coming in to support somebody, especially when they're new in sobriety. The C stands for closed meeting. And the closed meeting is strictly for people who have a desire to stop drinking. So family and friends typically not welcome at those meetings unless they have a desire to stop drinking. You know, they may be in support of their alcoholic loved one and will stop drinking to be supportive. I've seen it done in my own family, as a matter of fact. It's important to know those differences there. But if you're struggling with alcohol and an addiction to alcohol, you will not be thrown out of an AA meeting. I mean, even if you're half in a bag, if you can be quiet and listen, you're welcome. You're welcome. So anyway, that's
good.
Basically how an AA meeting works and is run. Do we have any questions in the studio today?
Well, so I'm going to be the audience, obviously. I'm the only other one here. So I liked what you were saying about if someone has a desire to quit drinking. So are you saying that, like, if a family member or a friend is, would you call it tempered drinker? Is that the word? Someone who can drink?
Yeah, a normal tempered drinker.
Normal person
yeah.
who, you know, a person who can drink but is not an alcoholic. They
right.
haven't lost the farm and their kids and the dog.
Right. And know? Or they have control of their drinking.
Right, exactly.
Those
I had to throw a little joke in there. I mean, because I have lost the farm. But so someone who is just going to stop drinking because they're choosing to help the loved one or the friend be able to be around them and support them and not have any alcohol around.
Right, right.
That's fabulous. So that person can come in there too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's great. I hadn't ever really thought about that. I guess mm-hmm. I never had anybody, you know, quit doing the things to support me. That's awesome.
Right, good. Right. Well, and you're coming from a slightly different environment where,
yep,
you know, not when people get involved in narcotics, they're surrounded by people that are heavy into it. Mm-hmm. There have been very few people I've known. I was actually one of them that mm-hmm. could use narcotics and walk away from them. Narcotics and, you know, other illegal substances.
That's fair. Yeah.
When weed was absolutely an illegal substance, amphetamine, when where it's kind of, depending on what doctor you go to, it can be legal or not legal. But anyway, those were alcohol was first and last for me, and it was the love of my life. So I could walk away from it, those other things, but
and that's
not
a,
booze.
That's a really good point, because when I entered into NA and into my program, I basically had to just stop hanging around the people who were my friends then.
Right.
Or the people I associated with.
Sure.
I don't know how good of friends we were to each other. I mean, we were trying, but we, you know, the capacity of being a good friend while you're using illegal narcotics is, well,
tenuous at best.
Yes, thank you. And so, but it was, though, good to see people as I was entering into recovery and over this almost 8 years now, come into the doors and, you know, and start getting clean and starting into recovery. That was awesome. It was like a just a great reunion of getting to see them and seeing them on the other side of things. So,
right. Yeah. And I not only appreciate that, I've experienced that. I got a call from a friend of mine about a month ago, and he ran into a brick wall with his drinking, and he called me up and said, I know you've been in this doing this AA thing for a while. Tell me a little more about it. Well, he just told me he's just got his 20 years.
That's awesome.
Of sobriety in. And although I think for a while he was what they call California sober, that's where you don't drink but you smoke weed. I don't count that against his sobriety, because alcohol was his problem first and last. And it was because of the example I set, just living my life, not I didn't go and preach to people. I didn't go tell my friends, you got to get sober. I wanted to early on, because sobriety was a wonderful thing for me. And it did change my life in a very positive way. But just being sober, turns out people notice it.
They do. And I just want to throw out there the importance of living this way. And people just know. I mean, they just know. They know who to turn to when they need help. They know they can talk to Radio Johnny and be like, hey, I need to go to an AA meeting.
Right.
Because you live it. You know,
right.
you live sobriety. So that's
or
cool.
Or they come to Denise and go, how have you changed your life that you're such a happy person now? Mm-hmm. I think that's one
Show
of the things.
Show me the way. Show me the way.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like the story about the guy who's fellow who's walking down the street and he stumbles into this deep hole, and his pastor walks by and he says, Pastor, I've fallen into this hole and I don't know how to get out. And the pastor writes down a prayer on a piece of paper and drops it down in the hole for the guy. And the guy looks at the prayer and he folds it and puts it in his pocket. Then his physician comes by and he says, Doctor, I've fallen in this hole. I don't know how to get out. Can you help me? Well, the doctor gets out his prescription pad and writes him a prescription and tosses it down into the hole. And he looks at it and folds it up, puts it in his pocket. And then a friend of his comes walking by and he says, hey, Bob, I've fallen in this hole and I don't know how to get out. Can you help me? Well, to his astonishment, his friend jumps into the hole with him. And he says, what are you doing? Now we're both stuck in here. And his friend says, no, Fred, I know the way out. Follow me. And that's really what we hope to do as members of AA, is to help people find the way out of that hole they're digging. We don't throw them another shovel.
Right.
We jump in the hole and we say, I know the way out.
Right, follow me. I've been here before, follow me. I have to interject and say that if you go to my church and you go up to my pastor and you say, I'm struggling with alcoholism or drugs, he'll tell you what night you need to come to church, and we'll send you to Restoration Night where you can get some help with that too.
Right.
Just
exactly.
Saying. I mean,
exactly.
I'm pretty solid saying that I'm pretty sure that's what he would say. He knows. He attends.
You know, like I've said before, Denise, AA, in the big book itself, it says that AA does not have a lock on sobriety or how to achieve sobriety. They specifically say when we're doing our fifth step, go to a trusted friend, a pastor. They refer to a lot of the prayers that are in the book, the third step prayer, ninth step prayer, are Christian-based prayers. And that's an issue some people have with it too, that it is very Christian-centric when it comes to talking about God or higher power. They reference a lot of Christian things.
It's kind of principles
Christian
from the Bible.
Principles and mm-hmm. thoughts.
Yeah.
And so can a Jew or a Muslim or a Buddhist apply these principles with
Absolutely.
All this Christian thing? And the answer is yes. I mean, that at least that's my opinion.
Yeah, Christians aren't cornering the market on telling the truth is a good idea. I think that's a good idea universally.
Yeah, pretty much. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're, you know, afraid of the God word, you know, don't let that keep you out of the rooms, because basically it's God is defined as a power greater than yourself. So it's not necessarily the guy who lives in the clouds with the big gray beard, who is very judgy and, you know, wants to lead
zap you with lightning bolts
certain way or you're going to catch a lightning bolt or whatever.
Yeah, that's not true.
So it's a God. You know, it said it in the steps that I read, God of your understanding. That's kind of a cool thing, you know, which is why I look at your program through Celebrate Recovery and through your belief in Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior. Mm-hmm. I tend to agree with you, but I see it a little differently than you, but I don't begrudge you mm-hmm. your belief, your way of believing, and how you practice your belief. There's a lot of singing, a lot of hands in the air. It's all very weird to me, but that's just me. I grew up in a church that was very hellfire and damnation, and that was one of my running excuses to keep behaving badly, drinking and using drugs and everything else, and all the other evil things I did, was because I was already doomed. You know, and we've talked about that. You know, that's religious abuse as far as I know you're concerned, and I see it that way as well. But, you know, I also believe in my heart that there is salvation out there for people like me, if you want to find it. And salvation can be as simple as I don't have to take a drink today, whether I want to or don't want to. It's not always the case in my life. Absolutely. There was something interesting in you read the tradition, the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I get asked this a lot because a lot of my fellows in AA know that I do this radio program, and I recruit them to come on and do this radio program, and the question comes up is, our 11th tradition, it says, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. And what that means is we don't put up posters saying, go to AA to live a sober life and be happy forever. You will occasionally see a public service announcement that says, we're here, we have meetings all over the place, and if you think you have a problem with alcohol, look us up. Where I run into a lot of questions and some people get confused or concerned is the rest of that statement is, we need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. So here we are on the radio, and I'm talking about AA and my experience with AA. How is that okay, right?
It's your experiences, though, isn't it?
Right. It is my experience, strength, and hope that I share here. But I don't want to become the poster child for AA. And there's a good reason for that. If I fall down, if
right,
I relapse,
okay. Sure.
Alcoholics like me will use that as a lever to say, AA doesn't work. Look what happened to Radio Johnny.
I see your point there, right?
Yeah. So that's why on the air, I am Radio Johnny. That is not my name.
But we like it. It's a good name.
It's catchy.
It's a good
name.
And that's
why I chose it.
Yeah.
But I am being anonymous
in this
program. And although my experiences are real, how I view things is real, it is two things. One, not the AA organization's approved talking points.
Right, exactly.
And it is also only my opinions and my experiences that I've had as a member of AA. And Radio Johnny is just a, you know, convenient idiot that I use to send
this information. It's your Radio
out.
Johnny hat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Perfect.
Exactly.
That's good that you clarified that.
Yeah, and Denise goes out as Denise because she is she's not a regular AA member. She has her sobriety maintained through another, like we said before, another set of circumstances and belief system. And in her system, evangelism, promotion is actually kind of the way things work.
Yeah, I mean, you get to share your story and your testimony in for Jesus, you know, and share how he works in my life.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And both of those things, as you can tell by the fact that we've been doing this for the last, 3 years?
Something like that, 3 or 4 years, I don't know.
It's
been a while.
Yeah, it has.
I'm not sure how long we've been saying 3 or 4 years.
So we started in December of 2017. It's almost so it'll be we'll have completed four years.
Yeah.
In December.
All right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's kind of the cool thing is that we come from, of course, you know, we're different people. We come from different backgrounds, different struggles, but we have a commonality of wanting to be in recovery and give people hope and share our stories.
That's
right. So that they can see that these things are possible.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
You'll see a circle with a triangle is a symbol for recovery. And you see it a lot around AA people. You'll see it on cars. Unfortunately, there's also a very similar one that has something to do with Harry Potter, but I think somebody from AA snuck it in there. But the circle and the triangle, the circle represents that we can do together what we couldn't do alone. And the triangle, the three sides of the triangle are the three basic tenets of how we can stay sober, and it's H-O-W, how. It's honesty, openness, and willingness. And there are other three-letter acronyms that people use, but that's the basic tenet of it, because without honesty, you can't do this.
Nope, you can't.
Like it said in Chapter 5 there, and how it works is, you know, rigorous honesty. You have to have that. If you don't, they say your chances are less than average. And the nearest number that I have ever seen, because AA is not organized and because we don't keep track of who comes in the door and who stays and who goes back out, but the anecdotal evidence says that only 1 in 4 will stay sober, you know, for a lifetime, a balance of a lifetime, I should say. And although that doesn't sound like a fabulous success rate, you know, again, it's only an estimate. I can say that my experience here of the people that come in, that's probably pretty close to accurate. Not everybody who comes in is necessarily an alcoholic. They may be just trying to figure out if they are or not. Mm-hmm. Or the legal system may have shoved them our way because of indiscretion of, you know, driving drunk or a domestic abuse scenario that involved alcohol, which is really common. And maybe those people do, or maybe those people don't, but it's up to them to decide. I think one of the most important things about Alcoholics Anonymous, I call myself an alcoholic. I self-identify as an alcoholic. Denise, if you came into the rooms, I would not say, oh, you're an alcoholic. I would wait till you told me if you were an alcoholic or not. We don't label people. We had the mayor on a few years ago, Bill, and I met Bill through the program. Now, Bill does not describe himself as an alcoholic, but he was going through a time where his wife was terminally ill, and he started to develop, I think he described it as a unhealthy relationship with alcohol as a coping mechanism.
Sure.
So he came in, and he was a part of the fellowship because he had a desire to stop drinking. But he discovered that he wasn't really an alcoholic, and that's great. Some people do that. I don't think that's the bulk of people that come in, but, you know, that person who foolishly gets behind the wheel after a night of drinking and gets arrested, and the judge asks them or directs them. They don't ask. Judges are funny that way. They pretty
it's
much kinda just
like,
tell you.
Are you going to do this or are we going to do jail right. time? Sometimes it's right. both. And yeah.
So they may or may not be an alcoholic. Chances are they aren't. They just made a mistake. But that's okay. They can come in. They can find out. And the beauty of it is once you think you have a problem with drugs and alcohol, you do. And whether it's a big problem or a small problem is up to you to decide.
Right.
But once you go to an AA meeting, you'll be able to figure it out. Even if you say, no, I don't fit this. And then 10 years down the road, you're on your third DUI. Your marriage is falling apart. You've lost a couple of jobs to alcoholic behavior, even maybe if you're not drinking. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know where to go. You know where to come back. So anyway, I think I've ranted and raved on long enough.
You've explained this stuff really well. I think it's good.
Good. Will we be seeing you at meetings then?
Well, I mean, I could drop in sometime just to say hi and see how it's going.
Yeah, you know? There you go.
I know, Johnny. Okay. If I stop in at one of your meetings, will you come to one of mine?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
And I've done it.
You have.
I have.
You have.
Done
and
it.
In fact, I guess I'm the next one to reciprocate.
Well, actually, I know that, you know, in your history, you participated probably in
yes,
plenty
I have.
Of them.
So. Yes, I have. Yeah.
It's not a contest. This is not whose program works better.
No. I was just thinking of, you know, just being supportive and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
So.
And I encourage people, go to, what's it called, the night?
Restoration Night.
Restoration
so, yeah,
Night.
It was CR and now it's Restoration Night, although we still offer the 12 steps, the CR step study. There, along with a lot of other classes and studies that we're doing. So,
right.
It's kind of, you know, it's all about hurts, habits, and hangups. And so, Restoration Night at Real Life Church on Thursdays at 6:25 is for anything you're going through, loss, divorce, anger, porn problems, any kind of sex addiction, kind of things like that. Yeah, and of course, you know, drugs, alcohol, yeah.
Mental health.
Yeah, and I mean, and when I say hang-ups, that could just be you're struggling with certain things that you believe to be true, and they're really messing up your life.
Right.
So, you know, if you're just not sure what's going on, you could just come in and sit, even if you don't know what to identify as the issue.
Right.
Just come in and listen to other people talk, and something might start making sense to you.
Right.
My guess is it will absolutely start making sense to you.
Yeah. Well, and like our guest last week, Colleen shared, or 2 weeks ago, actually, she shared that if you're just not happy, if you just can't find joy mm-hmm. in things you used to find joy in,
right.
there might be something going on. And, you know, having been to your... to one of your restoration nights where you've shared your testimonies, you call it, in AA we would call it our story or our experience, strength, and hope. I absolutely felt welcome, engaged, only slightly freaked out, but that's me. And it was a wonderful experience.
You were in a church, and so like, were you thinking something was going to happen? Like the place was going to burn down while you were there? Somebody was going to yell at you. Were you afraid somebody was going to yell at you or something? That's what it was. It was like
right.
childhood stuff.
Yeah, some sort of childhood trauma coming
right.
back to me.
We can help out with that too, you know, if you've got some spiritual
have,
damage kind of stuff. I'm sorry.
I have no problem going into church basements.
Yeah.
But the sanctuaries still give me the willies, and I do not know why, but I'm working on it.
Okay.
I'll figure it out eventually, I'm quite certain.
I'm sure you will.
So if not, I'll just avoid them for the time being. So anyway, well, thanks again, Denise, for your partnership in this endeavor, and let's get together in a week and do this again.
Sounds great.
What do you say?
Absolutely,
all right.
I'm here.
Well, I'll close with my usual, you know, if you think you have a problem with
drugs or alcohol or mental health issues or a hurt, habit, or hang up? You probably do.
Just